Good morning. Welcome to Senate Finance. Today is Tuesday, March 6, 2018. The time is 9 a.m. I'm Co-Chairman Anna McKinnon. With me this morning, Co-Chairman Hoffman.
Good morning.
Good morning. Vice Chairman Bishop.
Good morning.
Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Machicki, Senator Stevens, and Senator Olson. Welcome. Is there anything to come before the committee before we begin? On today's agenda, we have SB 155. It's the Real Estate Appraisal Management Companies, and HB 131, Relocation Assistance for Federal Programs and Projects. I'd like to direct the committee's attention to SB 155, Real Estate Appraisal Management Companies. We heard the bill on 221, bill presentation. The public hearing was open and closed. There were multiple questions, both from those who testified as well as the administration. We did not cover the fiscal note. We're still waiting for an update on that. I'd like to invite Julie Lucky to the microphone. Senator Bishop, could I have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move committee substitute for Senate Bill 155, version 30-LS1295/D before committee is our working document.
I'll object for purposes of understanding the changes to the CS for Senate Bill 155/D. Ms. Lucky, your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Julie Lucky, and I work for Senator Anna McKinnon. The CS you have before you encompasses changes that were requested and discussed at the previous meeting, and I will. There should be, in addition to the CS, a revised sectional and an explanation of changes, which is what I'll be using to present today. I accidentally put the summary of changes in a little bit of the wrong order, so we'll start with, we'll go in page order, so it'll be the third bullet, and then it'll go in order from there. The first change was to allow the department to collect fees to cover costs, and if the committee will recall, there was authority for the department to collect fees to pass through to the federal government, but not authority for them to collect their own costs, and that was a very simple change on page 4, line 18. The previous bill specified statute AS 0801065, subsection J, and if the committee will notice, the subsection J is not in this draft, and that allows them the authority to collect fees dealing with the whole chapter instead of just that one subsection. The next page increased the limit for the required surety bond to $50,000. The previous bill limit was $25,000. That was requested by the appraisal board during last committee, and that is on page 5, line 21. The next change is actually a deletion from the bill, so you won't find it on page 5 anymore. There was a fingerprinting requirement that was removed at the board's request. And then the last change is on the last page of the bill. I did not put the page number on here. I believe it's page 10. And that was adding the Section 9, which is the transition language allowing the department to promulgate regulations, and then the addition of an immediate effective date in Section 10 to allow them to start promulgating regulations immediately. There were some conforming and technical amendments, but that is all of the substantive changes that were made to the bill.
Are there questions about the CS and the changes? With that, I'll withdraw my objection for adoption of the CS for Senate Bill 155, Finance. Is there further objections? Seeing and hearing none, the CS is before Senate Finance Committee. I'd like to invite Senator Meyer and his staff, Edra Morledge, to the microphones. If you would both identify yourself for the record and then please provide us comments on both the underlying bill and the CS before us. Senator Meyer, welcome.
Very good. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senate Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Senator Kevin Meyer from representing South Anchorage.
Edra Morledge, staff to Senator Meyer. If you'd like, Madam Chair, I could go through the sectional analysis or just give you a brief overview of the underlying bill and why we were bringing it forward in the first place.
Both would be helpful at this point.
Okay. So it came to our attention a couple months ago that due to the Dodd-Frank Act of 2010, there's a federal deadline looming for states to put into place comprehensive regulations regarding appraisal management companies. That deadline is August of this year. The department has requested a one-year waiver to implement that program, but we have not received word whether we've been granted that waiver or any sort of guarantee that that would happen. appraisal management companies are business entities that administer networks of independent appraisers to fulfill real estate appraisal assignments on behalf of lenders. These companies will no longer be able to operate in the state of Alaska if we don't pass this comprehensive legislation. And this would cause problems for realtors, banks, and other lenders and have an adverse effect on the economy. Alaska is currently one of only four states, plus the District of Columbia, that have yet to pass comprehensive legislation on the subject. And the other three states and D.C. are all in the process of doing so during this legislative cycle. With that, Madam Chair, I could walk through the sectional for you. I know we went through it pretty comprehensively at our last meeting, but I could just walk you through that again if I can find it.
Senators, would you like a walkthrough, or is Ms. Luckey's changes to the previous introduction sufficient?
Luckey's changes are sufficient.
Thank you. Thank you, Edra. Are there questions of the sponsor of the bill? We do have invited the chair is online. We did make significant changes. I had in my notes that Ms. Chambers, who is in the audience, had brought up the collection fee, so we'll probably bring her to the microphone to make sure that we've addressed those. Mr. Derry was the chair of the Board of Real Estate Appraisers. He pointed out and asked for a change on that fingerprinting, as well as suggested that the board wanted to increase from $25,000 to the $50,000. So I believe the CS is responding to the public testimony that we heard, but we do have Mr. Derry online again this morning. Any other questions to the sponsor? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Meyer, are you in favor of the changes of the new CS?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, yes, we are. Now, you may hear from some other folks that are in the audience. For example, we did not, we want an effective, immediate effective date because we're not sure if we're going to get that one-year extension that's been asked for, and maybe the administration has a better handle on that than I. But we just thought that with immediate effective date, if we get this passed fairly soon, that it should be, we should be in able to be in compliance by August 2018 and not need that extension, even if we can get it. And through the chair, Senator Olson, you might there might be a difference of opinion as well on the bond requirements. But again, we went with kind of what was the norm in other states. And so, yes, we're in complete agreement with the changes.
No further questions, Madam Chair.
Senator Olson, I would just like to advise the committee we're not moving this bill today. We do have another bump that has come up, so I just want to make sure that we have cleared it so that the sponsor is ready to move forward, as well as from the Senate perspective that we've addressed the concerns that were raised. As I understand it, there's another issue that was just within the last 24, 36 hours raised about a controlling person needing to be in the state of Alaska, which is currently in the new CS. Again, we just want to make sure that we send a product out that's worthy of consideration of the Senate. And we're working with the sponsor to address the I don't want to say last minute, but certainly other concerns that are being raised. So we'd rather put out a good product than with the support of the sponsor, then move things out for without due consideration. With that, I'd like to, we already opened and closed the public hearing, so I will go for invited testimony. So Mr. David Derry, the chair of the Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers, you're online. Would you like to comment to the committee on the CS?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I wanted to again reiterate that the Appraisal Board does support the bill, and the Appraisal Board is ready to assume oversight of appraisal management companies. We appreciate the changes that have been identified here with the amendments and are actually in support of those with the exception of the bond amount. My previous testimony was that we requested that the bond amount be increased from $25,000 to $150,000, and we're still of the same opinion that the bond amount should be set at $150,000. I would point out that they, as I previously did, the state of Washington has a bond amount of $100,000. We think that since the appraisal management companies are all lower 48-based companies and our fiduciary responsibility to not only our fellow appraisers in the state but also the general public, the higher bond amount does provide some coverage and protection for that. And I would also just report to you that previous testimony has been, or information provided by the AMC lobby group, is that the bond amount at $150,000 would be too costly for them. They cited a cost of 1%, or that's going to translate to $1,500, which is certainly, in our view, not a really significant amount. In comparison, Alaska real estate appraisers currently pay a recertification fee of $1,130, and all appraisers that work for AMCs are usually required to carry errors and omissions insurance, which costs those appraisers anywhere from $1,000 to $2,500 per year. Their defense of the wanting to hold that bond amount at lower was that it was going to affect competition and result in higher consumer fees. And to counter that argument, I would just point out that some of the larger Alaska-based lenders do not use AMCs. For example, First National Bank Alaska, North Rim Bank, Mount McKinley Bank, and others actually do their mortgage originations in-house without AMCs. So it's not something that's going to really affect the consumer. It's not going to result in higher consumer costs, because for those originating lenders that use AMCs to remain competitive, they're going to have to remain competitive in their fees. So I'm open to any questions on that. I guess I would just mention, as one closing item here, regarding effective dates, we had been prepared to move ahead with the effective date of August of 2018. However, it would be to our benefit to provide that August 2019 date should we get a vote from the appraisal subcommittee to allow us that one-year extension. And that vote is scheduled for May by the appraisal subcommittee. Thank you.
Mr. Derry, this is Senator McKinnon. I have a list of other states, and they could have been cherry-picked based on the low fee structure, because it doesn't give me all 50 states, but it does give me a good cross-section of 15 or 20 that all have bonding fees at $25,000, which is what Senator Meyer originally proposed. Do you have a all 50-state average for us to consider in regard to the $150,000 versus the 50 that's currently a compromised position in this bill?
Madam Co-Chair, I do not have an average. I do have a list of all the states that do have AMC legislation enacted, and the state of Washington at $100,000 is, in all honesty, one of the higher bonding amounts. Some other states have a $50,000 bonding amount. And the information that I had obtained when I was researching that was that the AMC lobby had just been successful in effectively holding those bonding amounts down to those lower $20,000 and $25,000 amounts. And our defense is that these AMCs are all lower 48-related companies, and we all know the difficulty in essentially dealing with companies that are geographically quite far from us.
Are there questions from committee members? Senator Von Imhoff, did you have a question?
Well, Madam Chair, I guess I was going to ask the bill sponsor if he had considered 150 and how he landed on 50.
Senator Meyer, do you have a comment on the $50,000 or the testimony from Mr. Derry about why the board at least is recommending a higher number in the state of Alaska?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Von Imhoff. We're not sure what the right amount is. So we We went online here and found 23 states, and as you mentioned, Madam Chair, that it's a pretty good cross-reference. For example, Hawaii would have a similar geographical expense that Alaska has, with a lot of islands and a lot of places hard to get to, and their surety bond is at $25,000. You know, we landed on 50 because it's certainly higher than the 20 and 25,000 that I see in the list of 23 states here that we found. However, Washington, state of Washington, is 100,000, but we didn't find any that were any more than 100,000. So 150 just seemed too excessive. So we were trying to find where that sweet spot is. You know, whether it's 50 or 75. That'll be up to the committee to decide. But of the states that we looked at, most of them were lower rather than higher, like 20 and 25,000. And again, Hawaii is kind of what we based ours off of, and theirs is 25,000.
Senator Von Inhofe, follow up?
No, I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Senator Meyer, was there an average that of all that you looked at? Again, I'm just looking at a list that predominantly shows the $20,000-$25,000 surety bond rate. We do have Virginia, Washington, and West Virginia. Two of those states are up to $100,000, and one of them is $100,000. So that certainly sways the average. But is there an average if we take out the highs? Is it in the $20,000-$25,000 range? Edra.
Madam Chair, Edra Moreledge, staff to Senator Meyer. In my initial research, and I only had 21 on my list, so this has an additional couple, but the average was approximately 33,000.
Thank you. Senator Michicki.
Yeah, my question would be for Mr. Derry, or the sponsor, but Mr. Derry's the chair. If I may, Madam Chair, Mr. Derry, what kind of costs are you fearing wouldn't be covered by a $50,000 surety bond, and what other protections are available if there is a claim or an appraisal problem above that amount?
To the co-chair, Senator Michicki, our concern is that, a lower 48 appraisal management company that may default, go out of business, and would have essentially funding or payment owing to appraisers that could easily exceed $25,000 or even $50,000. When you look at what appraisal fees are, and considering that many appraisers servicing rural areas have to charge airfare in addition to their appraisal fees that often exceed the fee itself. So if an appraiser is flying to Bristol Bay region, for example, the appraisal fee may be, I'm not sure what they're charging for that area, but say maybe $800 or $900, and airfare, lodging, et cetera, could probably equal that. So it would be fairly easy for an appraisal management company that was active in rural areas to run up a accounts payable that would exceed even $50,000. And then if that appraisal management company defaulted, we have no recourse or any way to actually assist recovery for our fellow appraisers in Alaska.
Okay, so Madam Chair, Mr. Derry, you're more concerned about a collective cost as opposed to a single. So a company obviously defaulting on potentially having some exposure on several or many appraisals, not an individual cost.
Through the co-chair, Senator Michicki, that's correct. And what we're looking at is, if we have a number of different appraisal management companies operating, could easily end up with a total amount. And we had a couple of appraisal management companies that were to default or were unable to pay bills, we could have certainly exceed that $50,000 amount.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Derry, I have a couple of questions. Can you tell me whether anyone has had to use their surety bonds inside of the state of Alaska for the management appraisal companies, to your knowledge?
Madam Co-Chair, since we do not have any oversight of appraisal management companies currently, I'm not aware that there are any appraisal management companies that that have any bond amounts. I mean, essentially, up to this point, they would be allowed to operate with effectively no oversight at all.
Mr. Derry,
up until the August 2018 drop dead date here under Dodd-Frank, when we would have to enact legislation.
Mr. Derry, other states have implemented the surety bond concept for this oversight in years past. To your knowledge, as the chairman, do you know if anyone has accessed those surety bonds in other states?
Madam Co-Chair, I have not researched that.
Thank you. There is nothing prohibitive in the bill before us. Mr. Derry, this is to you that an individual lender or management company, that they couldn't go above the $50,000 if that were the limit for the state of Alaska. So if someone was concerned, as you pointed out, that they were traveling and there was an accumulation of issues, that they could, as a business decision, have a higher surety bond. Is that your understanding?
Certainly they could, Madam Co-Chair. They could set whatever bonding amount they wanted. I think that just normal business practices would be that they're going to at least meet that minimum, and in many cases it would be just the minimum.
Thank you. Senator Hoffman.
Madam Chair, having had several appraisals done in rural Alaska, the practice that I've seen out in western Alaska is that the appraiser does not come out unless he has 3, 4, or 5 appraisers, and if the need exists that an individual wants it earlier, they go ahead and adjust for that. But to try to set the appraisal or the surety bond at a higher level because of rural Alaska, I think is doing unjust service to the rest of Alaska. Today, I think the practice is working fairly well in western Alaska, as far as I can tell.
Senator Meyer, did you have a comment for consideration of the committee on this issue?
Madam Chair, no. I mean, it's a judgment call, policy call on what is the right amount. I'm going to ask my staff. It seems like if you set the bond too high, though, you might limit the number of appraisers who would participate in Alaska. Is that correct?
This is Edra Morledge again, staff to Senator Meyer. I think part of the concern of setting the surety bond high is that this is a recurring cost for individuals. So, yes, it would have an impact on overall business expenses and perhaps competitiveness.
If I could speak to that, I personally have no problem with the $50,000 surety limit, these are banks and lending agencies, and these are management appraisal. Help me with the definition. Management appraisal companies. So are they typically one person? The reference in the bill is lending agencies, so I'm thinking credit unions and banking organizations that have appraisers for them. Is that accurate?
Madam Chair, the appraisal management companies themselves are standalone entities. So lending institutions would contact them, and they're the ones that would hold the surety bonds.
Thank you for that clarification. Senator Bishop.
Well, just a comment following along the conversation here at the table from the two previous speakers. But it appears that this bill sponsor, to me, has made a reasonable compromise on the surety bond numbers, going off of Ms. Mortledge's research, and it's kind of splitting the baby, and we've yet to, we don't have a track record. So without a track record, I support what the sponsors proposed before the committee.
Brief at ease. We're back on the record. Senator Machicki.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I thought there may have been a misunderstanding on the need for a surety bond, so we took a little break and I asked a few questions. And my understanding is that a appraisal management company may hire the same appraisers to go out and do a bunch of the several appraisals, so to speak, right? And it may be the same appraisals that are appraisers that are have an individual company right now. Their concern is that if there was a log of unpaid appraisals and a company defaulted, that it may not cover that. And now it took me a while to understand what the surety bond was protecting against. I don't know that $50,000 isn't adequate. I think we charge our contractors a $20,000 surety bond, if I'm correct. I'm looking for a nod from Ms. Chambers in the background there. She's nodding yes. And I think they can run up a higher bill. So is $50,000 enough? It's probably adequate. We can certainly adjust it if we run into a problem in the future. But I think I better understand Mr. Derry's concern, and I don't know if you want to ask Mr. Derry if I've captured that well or not, but I just recognize the disconnect as we were talking about it around the table, and I think that clarifies it a bit better.
Senator Machicki, thank you for those clarifying comments. Mr. Derry, has Senator Machicki accurately reflected your concern about you as an appraiser going out somewhere and a management company not paying you? Is that accurate?
Madam Co-Chair, that is correct, and Senator Machicki is correct that you could have the same appraisers doing a number of appraisals for the same appraisal management company. So, yes, they could easily run up a fairly significant bill with the appraisal fees to that appraisal management company.
Thank you for those comments to consider. Mr. Derry, will you stay online for us as we continue this conversation? I'm aware of two other issues that I'd like to come back and get your comments on after we hear from some other people. Can you stay online with us?
Yes, Madam Chair, I certainly can.
Thank you, sir. With that, I would like to invite Ms. Sarah Chambers to the microphone. I'm in receipt of a letter dated February 8th. Signed by Ms. Chambers, that is asking us to extend, it's a formal request for an extension of the implementation period to establish the EMC program in the state of Alaska until August 10th, 2019. The current CS before you has an immediate effective date. Ms. Chambers, comments, and then if you could focus on letting us know if this request from February 8th is still a concern, and if so, why.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sarah Chambers. I'm the Deputy Director of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. We did submit a letter to the Appraisal Subcommittee, the Federal Oversight Committee, requesting an extension from the 2018 deadline to a deadline in 2019. The bulletin that the ASC Appraisal Subcommittee issued stated that draft legislation would be considered a cause for an extension. It was one of the examples that they listed that they would consider to be worthy of an extension. This is beyond draft legislation, so we are confident, but we cannot say that we've received it until they meet in May and formally make that determination. So we have asked for that extension for that 2019 date because we believe that would make the rollout smoother. It would give the department and the board time to develop regulations and inform those who may want to do business as appraisal subcommittee or appraisal management companies of the licensing requirements, which must all be codified in regulation. So the transition language that was added is very helpful, and it's unlikely that regulations would be completed, though, before the effective date of the bill. So without the extension of the date of the bill, the transition regulations probably don't accomplish very much. And we would just need to hustle to make sure that everyone was licensed properly as best as we can before the requirement to be licensed comes into effect. But it may be that that doesn't happen in all cases, and I'm not sure what the implication on transactions would be, whether they would have to cease transactions until they became licensed because of the timing of the effective date of the bill.
Questions from committee members? Ms. Chambers, at least the sponsor's response that I reviewed indicated that they believed that we needed to go forward with implementation because, if I'm recalling correctly, the committee that would look at the extension doesn't meet until May. Is that accurate?
Madam Chair, that's correct. They don't meet until May.
And the concern of the sponsor, as I recall, is that without immediate implementation that we would be out of compliance with federal law and in violation of federal law.
Madam Chair, my understanding is that there may be a period of time if we did not receive the extension. There would be a period of time that might cause those appraisal management companies that are not federally regulated, those would be ones that are regulated by another entity but not the federal government, would not be able to operate in the state. Without state oversight, federally regulated appraisal management companies may still operate. So we're trying to cast a wider net and be able to not only manage according to the standards set by the state of Alaska, but also widen who would be able to perform appraisals under as a company model in the state. So either way, my assessment is that there may be a period of time in which appraisal management companies that are not federally regulated will not be able to operate because they won't be able to be licensed either way you look at it.
Questions from committee members? Ms. Chambers, is there inside of Alaska state statute the ability to implement emergency regulations so that we have regulations on the books that would be in compliant and then be in place while you're going through the appropriate approval process for regulation?
Madam Chair, we've been gently advised by the Department of Law that emergency regulations are reserved for matters of public emergency and not administrative emergencies, so I'm not sure that we would get support from the Department of Law to consider this an emergency.
Ms. Chambers, then why does it take over a year to implement regulations on an existing board?
Madam Chair, we don't believe it would take that long. This board has actually already been working on regulations. However, the Administrative Procedures Act gives it requires at least 3, possibly 4 months for the review process by law, the 30-day public comment period that's required. There is another review by law and another 30 days of sitting in the Lieutenant Governor's office, which is, again, a procedural matter. So the extension, without the extension, this bill would take effect and licensure would be required prior to the 3 to 4 months time period. So there would be that window where you must be licensed to perform a transaction, but it would be impossible to become licensed. And then there would be another period of time in which they would fill out the application. We would receive the fees, we would review the application, and the board would review it. So the process, regardless, is going to take probably 6 months at least for someone to become licensed because of the regulations and the application process.
So this is complex. Senator von Imhoff.
So I think what I'm hearing then is you're asking for the extension for an all-in type of scenario, as in not only is it going to use that time to write the regulations, but implement the new requirements, communicate that to all the appraisers, and then allow the appraisers the time to apply and get their surety bond and become compliant by August 10, 2019. So that's what I'm hearing?
Through the chair, yes, Senator, that's correct.
Senator Bishop.
Ms. Chambers, thank you, Madam Chairman. You just gave us the worst case scenario. You stated earlier that you folks are already working towards this goal. So can you give us a under the line and an over the line estimate? We got the over the line. What's the under, you know, could it be, it could be faster.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, I believe if you, what I described was likely the best case scenario. It would take 3 to 4 months per state law to process regulations, and then the applicants would need more time to submit their applications and then for the board to review it. I think 6 months from soup to nuts is probably the best case scenario. So setting a date earlier than August 2019 would certainly be within reason. However, an immediate date would leave that gap up to that six-month-ish period.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Ms. Chambers, I might need to ask the sponsor this. When is the federal compliance deadline?
Madam Chair, the federal compliance deadline is this coming July, unless one's granted an extension.
So it seems to me, with the support of the committee, that we might need to insert some contingency language. If the extension is approved, we might want to set a start date, and I am just brainstorming with the committee at this point of January 1st, 2019, certainly not August 2019, the start of a calendar year might be a possibility for your consideration, but contingency language on if the extension is approved. If the extension is not approved, what we're really talking about is regulations, and I believe we're caught in the quandary one way or the other, or the quagmire that Ms. Chambers has described if we don't get the extension. So I will look to you as we set the bill aside to see if you and your team on finance can come up with a different path forward. But what comes to mind right now is contingency language to offer that. But we'll work with the sponsor. The sponsor is trying to be compliant with the federal government request, as I understand it. Senator Bishop, follow-up, followed by Senator Michicki.
I just have a clarification. Ms. Chambers, you, I don't know, 5 minutes ago, had said something and about there are federal AMC, or there federal loans could be processed within the state currently, or something to that effect. Is that right?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, my understanding, and I'm glad Mr. Derry's on the line in case he can clarify, as an appraiser, is that there are federally regulated appraisal management companies currently, and that they would continue to operate, whether they're operating in Alaska or not, they would be able to continue to operate without this legislation. However, if one is not regulated by those federal entities, then they would not be able to operate in a state that didn't have its own oversight scheme.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Senator Michicki.
I haven't heard an answer on kind of the obvious question, and this isn't pointing fingers at anyone, but why are we up against another deadline with another bill that has to pass? I mean, the act was 2010. I don't know when the requirement for the state appraiser certifying and licensing agencies was amended, and when we became knowledgeable that a change had to take place. But why are we up against a deadline on this, as opposed to being more timely?
Through the chair, thank you, Senator Michicki. That's a very fair question. The board worked to secure a sponsor for this, to accomplish this goal, 2 years ago, I believe, after the federal regulations were finalized. I believe they were only finalized in 2015, after the law took effect in 2010. So the board had been working to secure a sponsor and wasn't able to do so until Senator Meyer offered to do so.
Thank you.
Any other questions on implementation of regulations before we actually require licensure? Mr. Derry, do you have comments on this particular point? And then we'll move to our final point that I know of concern.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The question here, I think, is regarding implementation of the regulation and the relationship of what is a federally regulated AMC. I just point out that based on our information, there is effectively only one or maybe two AMCs that actually qualify as federally regulated AMCs. The large bulk of them are not. And so if the if it was not, if we did not enact AMC legislation and the August 2018 drop-dead date went into effect, AMCs would not be allowed to operate in Alaska on what's called a federally regulated transaction. And this gets really confusing, and I sort of hesitate to even go into this because it gets even more murky, but a federally regulated transaction is actually something that's defined under the Dodd-Frank Act, and it basically takes in about 10% of all of the mortgage lending that happens in the nation based on surveys that have been done. Now, AMC legislation, conversely, encompasses residential financing of primarily principal residences, and it would essentially cover the large bulk of financing that happens. So the AMCs are interested in having legislation so that they can operate within a state, so that they can do all of these kinds of loans. In the absence of that, then they could operate, but they could only operate on non-federally, like federally regulated transactions. So, to date, there's four states in the nation that do not have AMC legislation, and all of those states, I believe, do have legislation pending. So, you know, we do want to enact it. That's our motivation in doing that. I would just point out one other thing here. One of the senators commented about appraisers posting certi bonds. Please understand that the certi bond is posted only by the appraisal management company, not the appraiser working for the appraisal management company.
Thank you for those comments. Senator Michicki, follow up?
No, thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Derry, I think that accurately describing clear as mud, so let me try to help if my grandson, who is 4 years old, is listening today. Do you believe, or are you telling the committee that we need to go ahead, not do an extension to a later date because there are only two companies that could operate in the state of Alaska? Should we wait for implementation if we don't receive? I know there's a lot of variables here, and if we don't receive that extension, is that what you're telling us? Or please help me understand specifically in layman's terms what the consequence to the state is of not having regulations in place.
Madam Co-Chair, if the regulations were not in place, some appraisal management companies could still operate in Alaska, and we could still basically do licensing of those appraisal management companies whenever we did have regulations prepared, even if it was after the August of 2018 date. But I support Director Chambers' approach of giving that extension to the one-year extension. I feel confident that we will get the vote from the appraisal subcommittee to allow us that one-year extension, and that allows us then to go ahead and develop the regulations as through the normal process. But I don't know if, to my knowledge, neither of those federally regulated appraisal management companies operate in the state of Alaska. There are a couple of obscure AMCs. This is something that has come out in our previous interaction with the appraisal management company, appraisal subcommittee, which is a federal entity. So I'm sorry. This gets really involved, and I think maybe it's not even – I can certainly understand your concern. It is clear as mud, and I've spent a lot of time essentially going through this all myself just to clearly understand it. But the bottom line is that if we assess the effective date and allow us that time to develop the regulations, that's the preferred route that we would like.
Thank you for that re-clarification. Other questions from committee members regarding this particular cloudy area? We will work with the sponsor and try to stay in communications with Mr. Derry on this particular issue. The next item that I know that we've been advised of contention is, as you read the bill, you hear about a controlling person, and right now that controlling person of the appraisal management company is in the state. And it has been proposed that we should, at least by one entity, remove the in-the-state requirement. I'd like to hear from William Scoggin from the Real Estate Valuation Advocacy Association. He's calling in from North Carolina. And then we'll bring the sponsor back to the table to talk about this last piece of information that needs clarity in the CS. Mr. Scoggins, welcome to Senate Finance. You are invited to provide brief comments to the committee regarding the CS and the three issues that we have before us remaining to solve.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Madam Chair. Bill Scoggin, representing the Real Estate Valuation Advocacy Association, or REVA as we commonly call it. Thank you for your time today and that of the committee. REVA is the National Trade Association for Appraisal Management Companies and represents most of the larger ones along with a number of smaller ones as well. We have worked very hard with licensing boards in various states, including this one, to try to push forward legislation that enacts the scheme that satisfies the requirements in Dodd-Frank. And we're very pleased to that the appraisal board supports that effort here. I would just note a few things on the issues today that the committee members have discussed in great detail. With respect to the surety bond requirement, REVA does not oppose that within the committee substitute, but I would note that there are 25 states that have no surety bond requirement whatsoever, and among them Texas, Montana, California, which, in my mind anyway, have some of the same considerations as far as travel and expenses. Hawaii, as Senator Meyer pointed out, has $25,000. If you look down those states, and I had lawyers in my office research this last week, of the other 21 states, nearly all of them are either $20,000 or $25,000. With the only exception by statute being Washington, and by rule, Virginia and West Virginia, as the chair recognized, have that authority of up to $100,000. So I'll just note that and say that while we would view 50 as probably excessive, we do not oppose that. With respect to the implementation and transitions and all that, the only comment I would make there is, well, two comments. One, I hope the appraisal subcommittee grants the relief requested, because that would certainly clarify things. I have no insight on that. But I would say that with respect to the discussion of federally regulated AMCs, appraisal management companies, there is only one. And they're not. That's the exception rather than the rule. The bulk of our membership are state licensed. Beyond that, the drafting issue with respect to a controlling person in the state or in any state, the other statutes across the country tend to say licensed in any state because the concern identified, I think, by a constituent who wrote in is one that we agree with, and that is you don't want to limit that certification to just someone that's either physically in Alaska or licensed in Alaska, and other states have recognized that, and I think it actually probably was a drafting oversight more than anything else as this legislative draft was prepared. Madam Chairman, those are my comments, and I stand by to answer any questions.
Are there questions from committee members? Mr. Scoggins, could I ask you to stay online for the completion of this round of conversation today in case we have any further questions?
Certainly.
Thank you for joining Senate Finance today. Mr. Derry, I'd like to ask you a question. On page 4 of the bill, lines 28 through 30, it talks about uniform standards of professional appraisal practices adopted by the Appraisal Standards Board of the Appraisal Foundation. When we are talking about this issue of in the state and the controlling person versus the language that Mr. Scoggins just proposed, licensed in any state, can this committee have confidence that those standards then are like or exact for qualifications?
Madam Co-Chair, could you refer to where this is referenced here as far as a controlling person being within the state? I guess I'm looking at section 08.87.135, item B, small b. It says a controlling person designated under A of this section must be actively certified in the state as a real estate appraiser and so forth. Is this what we're talking about in this particular section?
I don't think that you're on the right section for the in-state. I can go back and look for that. That wasn't the question that I just asked you to comment on, but we can find that for you.
All right. If you could, please, in terms of the Uniform Standards of Professional Appraisal Practice, or USPAP, to respond specifically to your question, Madam, all certified appraisers in each state are subject to the same Uniform Standards or USPAP, yes.
So that we can have confidence the standards are the same throughout the state, so that could fix the language. And I've located for you, Mr. Derry, on page 5, under 8B, line 22, a controlling person designated under A of this section must be actively certified in the state, which would be Alaska, as a real estate appraiser at all times, that the person is designated as the controlling person.
All right, Madam Chair, that's exactly the section I was looking at, and I would just point out that we would support the bill the way it's currently written. Essentially, the person could be, it doesn't state they must be in the state of Alaska, it just states that they must be certified in the state. And we have appraisers from all over the nation that are certified in the state of Alaska under the reciprocity provisions of our regulations. So it's not uncommon to have appraisers in the various other states that apply for Alaska certification under the reciprocity provisions, and we grant them that. They come to Alaska, they do their work. So this would be no different than that. They do not have to be a resident of the state of Alaska.
So we'll get legal clarification on that. That's certainly not how others are interpreting that. Questions from committee members? Do we have anyone from the Department of Law that could comment? Ms. Chambers, do you have any comments on the controlling person in state?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, this is Sarah Chambers with the Department of Commerce. And the section requiring the controlling person to be actively certified in the state, I would agree with our interpretation would be the same as Mr. Derry's, that they must be certified, but they don't have to be physically present or a resident of the state. They would just need to meet the state's appraiser requirements.
Thank you, Ms. Chambers, for that clarification. We do have, or I'm in possession of at least a comment from one individual that believes that that will be a burden for out-of-state larger management firms. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Ms. Chambers, so the reciprocity issue, could you comment on that? Do we have reciprocity agreements with all other states?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, this is one of the unique programs, and this was enacted through federal legislation that licenses are fairly transportable. So in most states, if their requirements are equal to or greater than Alaska's, we would go through a sort of an expedited or application light process to recognize their standards in another state. And as Mr. Derry said, it's not uncommon to have licensees in another state. I do understand, however, that if they are, as the chair mentioned, a large company that perhaps operates in all jurisdictions, that could be quite a bit of paperwork for that controlling person.
So, Madam Chair, is your understanding that if we look at must be actively certified, that does include the item of reciprocity, so there would be other – your understanding of that sentence is not that it has to be resident in Alaska?
Through the chair, that's correct.
Thank you.
Thank you for those clarifying comments. Any other questions for the bill sponsor, for Mr. Scoggins or Mr. Derry, who have been following this issue? Seeing and hearing none, we're still in a holding pattern for the fiscal note related to SB 155. With the support of the committee, we will introduce a new CS trying to address language that is supported by the sponsor. If we can do that, if we have contention points, so we may or may not offer amendments or prepare amendments for your consideration. Is there anything else on Senate Bill 155? With that, we'll set this aside. I'd like to direct the committee's attention to House Bill 131. House Bill 131, Version D, is an act relating to the relocation assistance for federally assisted public construction and improvement projects and programs and providing for an effective date. This is the first time we're hearing the bill. Is Representative Adam Wall here? Laura, if you could identify yourself for the record. And then give us an update on the location of Representative Wall.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of Senate and Finance. Representative Wall is in a meeting right now, and I'm working on behalf of the House Transportation Committee.
Welcome to Senate Finance. Could you open up and give us a bill presentation and then a walkthrough on the sectional?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Before you is House Bill 131, Federal Relocation Assistance Program Projects, which will bring Alaska into compliance with federal law concerning reimbursement for relocation expenses incurred by individuals or businesses that were displaced due to federally funded highway, bridge, or facilities projects. Alaskans deserve to be fairly compensated in these circumstances. HB 131 will protect Alaska's $500-plus million annual allocation of Federal Highway Administration funding by bringing the state into compliance. In 2012, Congress relaxed the eligibility criteria and increased the maximum reimbursement limits for the state's relocation assistance payment programs when they passed their Transportation Authorization and Funding Bill, the Moving Ahead for Progress into the 21st Century Act, aka MAP 21. Prior to MAP 21, the payment rates hadn't changed for 30 years. These changes went into effect October 1st, 2014. Unfortunately, Alaska's statute continues to reflect the more stringent eligibility criteria and the smaller maximum reimbursement limits. During the second half of the 29th Alaska legislature, this inconsistency between state and federal law was nearly fixed. It was passed unanimously in the House, and it made it all the way to passed through this committee as well and was held in Senate rules and never calendared. HB 131 assures Alaskans that their legislature wants them to be compensated the same as a resident of any other state. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to present this bill on behalf of the House Transportation Committee. Heather Fair, the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, statewide chief, right-of-way chief, is here to answer any questions as well.
Laura, could you walk us through the structure of the bill with a sectional analysis?
So Section 1 adds public construction and improvement projects to AS 3461 or 10. And Section 2 is repealed and redoes the, and reenacts the payments and amounts for displaced individuals. Section 3 adds in the current federal statute that was amended. Section 4 does the same thing as well. And Section 5 does the same thing as far as adding in the federal statute that was amended in 2012. And Section 6 is the effective date, which is retroactive to October 1st, 2014.
Are there questions on the structure of the bill? Thank you for that introduction. Ms. Fair, I see that you're online for questions. Do you have any comments for the committee?
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the Senate Finance Committee. My name is Heather Fair. I am the statewide right-of-way chief for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities and here to answer your questions. I have no specific comments at this time, but I'm prepared to answer any questions.
Ms. Fair, is the administration supportive of the bill?
Madam Chair, yes, the administration is supportive of the bill.
Senator Olson, was that your question? I apologize.
It was, Madam Chair. Very good question.
Senator Bishop.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Could this bill lead to increased payments to affected parties along the right-of-way from an acquisition standpoint?
Senator Bishop, through the chair, it could lead to increased payments to affected parties. That is, the intent is to bring the federal regulations into more of the present day of what it costs to relocate a family when a project has to do so. The state match, however, is very small, and it comes out of our appropriation. So the state match appropriation is approximately 10% of the total federal appropriation, and it's included in our department's capital budget.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So through the chair, I just want to make sure that relocating is different than compensating market value for the land loss. So if a road was going to be widened and you took people's homes to widen the road, the first step would be to compensate the person's home for the person's home for the market value, if my logic is correct, and then secondly, pay in addition to relocating them to a new location. Is that correct?
Senator Von Imhoff, through the chair, that's correct. We do pay market value first, minimum, for the acquisition of the property that we must acquire for a project, and then we also pay relocation assistance where applicable.
Okay. And we're in the, through the chair, just one more question.
Certainly, Senator Von Imhoff.
So it used to be $20,000 maximum to relocate a farm business or family, and now it's $40,000, which is the federal government's maximum. Is that correct?
Senator Von Imhoff, I'm checking the prior numbers for farms. There are different numbers. through the chair. There were different numbers available for families versus businesses versus farms, and yes, those numbers have increased and in some cases doubled.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Machicki.
Just to clarify for the record, that's the non-residential. The numbers the senator gave from 20 to 40 was non-residential, right? Is that business, the business increase?
Senator Machicki, through the chair, I believe that's correct. I'm just looking for the old figures. Yes, Senator Machicki, through the chair, that's correct. The non-residential moves were 20,000 prior and now 40,000. And it's important to note that the federal government has not increased these amounts in over 30 years.
Senator Machicki, follow up?
Well, I was just wondering how the escalation, how they came up with an escalation number. So is this, was it on some sort of CPI or something that, I mean, just pick one. The homeowner's maximum purchase price differential for homeowners from 22 to 31,000. Was this from the date in the 80s, or do you know where they arrived at the differential and what they used for an index?
Senator Machicki, through the chair, my understanding is that they used historical data of actual relocations over the years, and these numbers are still set based on actual expenses, so you have to just show you've spent that in order to get that maximum. It's not just a free-for-all payment.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions from committee members? Ms. Fair, we're not on the fiscal note yet, and so maybe you could just think about this until we get there, but the fiscal note does not really show any cost to the state, and there is cost to the state. In fact, you're going retroactively, or at least the bill proposes to go retroactively back to 2014. So I'm wondering what the accumulated additional GF spend or federal spend will be on going back to 2014. Let me just confirm for the record, you're using that date because that's the date when MAP 21 was actually authorized.
Madam Chairman, that's correct, that we are going back to a date from the actual authorization from the federal government under the Moving Ahead for Progress in the 21st Century Act. The federal regulations have yet to be finalized and updated, and so they're also going to have that retroactive number. To also just assuage the concerns of retroactive payments, to date, we're estimating none at this time that we owe for past payments. And we've looked forward to the forward 4 years based on prioritization of projects and our available capital budget as roughly $11,000 of the state share, so very, very small amounts. And again, that's in our capital budget, would not come out of general fund.
Questions from committee members? 11,000, so that means 100,000 to property owners along right-of-ways about?
Madam Chair, that's correct, in federal funds.
In federal funds. Senator Von Imhoff.
So how is this going to be communicated to alert people who've been affected since 2014 forward, that this option is available?
Senator Von Imhoff, through the chair, this has already been communicated, so whenever we are working on a relocation, we have to disclose the current federal maximums. Currently, what we have to do in order to exceed state maximums is we have to go through a very complex process called the Housing of Last Resort. And the federal government participates in that, and so that's why we have a zero fiscal note. They still do it, but it's very extensive, requires much more justification, staff time, et cetera, and we're expecting that that would be more than offset with the savings by being authorized to make the higher payments from the get-go.
Senator Von Imhoff, follow up.
Okay, so I do appreciate moving forward, but if there were some folks that feel that they were undercompensated back in 2016, how are they going to know that this option is available, that they could perhaps go back and get additional monies?
Senator Von Himhoff, through the chair, there are no affected parties that would qualify, and that is because we do very few relocations. We try to design around relocating people.
Okay, so the look back in October at this point, or going back to 2014, is sort of, are you saying it's immaterial or it doesn't really matter because there are no affected parties?
Senator Von Himhoff, through the chair, that's correct at this time.
Okay.
Other questions on how the bill operates? I'd like to open the public hearing on House Bill 131, Version D. Is there anyone wishing to testify on House Bill 31? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed. Senator Bishop, are you ready to cover the fiscal note?
Yes, ma'am. Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, Design, Engineering, and Construction, Allocation Statewide Design and Engineering Services, OMB Component Numbers 2357, that's a zero fiscal note. This proposal creates no impact to the department's operating budget. The increased relocation costs will be absorbed within existing capital programs, and I believe Ms. Large has kind of alluded to that small number, or Heather. Did, excuse me.
Ms. Fair.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Ms. Fair. Yep. Zero.
Are there questions on the fiscal note? We did talk about a potential impact of $11,000 of GF. These are ballpark numbers that we're working with right now. As Senator Bishop stated, it would be absorbed in the State Transportation Improvement Plan, otherwise known as STIP. No further questions? Senator Machicki.
So if I understood Ms. Fair correctly, that was an estimate on future costs for the next 4 years of projects on STIP. Was that correct?
Senator Machicki, through the chair, it's correct that it would be an impact on the state's capital budget in the future, maximum estimate for the next 4 years. And that is if we have to relocate those that we anticipate we could have to relocate.
Thank you.
Thank you for that clarification, Senator Machicki. I would just point out, as one individual, we have passed this bill before. I put it out of committee as a due pass. I'm not sure if I said it then, but I'll say it now. It is a little bit troublesome when we link ourselves with a federal statute because we lose control on what the federal government is saying. So sometimes we adopt national, as an example, national electrical code standards, and then when something changes that we might think is unnecessary because we've linked ourselves inside of state statute, it's an automatic requirement for all the municipalities throughout our state. And so we are considering in House Bill 131 linking ourselves to, you know, these maximum numbers that the federal government can change at their call versus our call. So just put that on the record that this is a linkage where we have a defined fixed number that we could input the federal government fixed number, and then we would be required if they raised it to go in and change it again versus having that automatic link. So just a cautionary note. Further comments? Any closing comments from the sponsor?
Madam Chair.
Ms. Fair.
Madam Chair, thank you for that point that's well taken, that when we link to federal regulations, there is always a risk. I think that it's important to also note that we're well buffered from that risk with such a large federal percentage that's paid versus our small amount, and it makes us able to be quite flexible in prioritizing projects, and it could also mean that we would prioritize projects where relocations are not needed over those where relocations would be required, so that we'd be able to absorb that and not increase our funding or our appropriations. In addition to that, it's important to note that this is our agreement with our federal funding partners, and so in order to comply with that agreement and receive federal funding, we must match their figures.
Ms. Fair, and that could be done with a fixed number versus the open statutory link also.
Madam Chair, that's correct. It could be, and in fact, it was done that way in the past, and that is why we are now lagging.
Thank you. Well put. Senator Machicki? With that, I would like amendments by 5 p.m. on Wednesday. That's tomorrow. With that, thank you for joining us in Senate Finance today. On tomorrow's agenda, we are considering a governor appointees for the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, Mike Powers and Vern Borner, and the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, Janice Wilson and Paul Lasanke. Is there anything else to come before the committee? If not, we're adjourned.